Hello, everybody, and welcome to Masterclass tonight.
Hello.
How are you? How's everybody doing?
Hello.
Great.
It is Thursday, June 8th, 2023, and we're going to start another Masterclass. We have some excellent, as we always do, some excellent presentations and presenters, and we should be having a lot of fun tonight. And let's see who we can go ahead and start with. Who's first on the list? Pallavi, are you ready?
Yes, I am.
Ready. Go ahead and take it.
Sure. I'll share my screen. Can everybody see my screen now?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
So good evening, everybody. My topic for today is cloud computing. So what is cloud computing? Many of us use cloud-based services every day, whether we realize it or not. The cloud has had a massive impact on the way organizations and companies work. The name comes from the fact that technology is internet-based, and in computer literature, the internet is represented as a cloud. Cloud computing is a method by which we access remote servers that provide software, storage, database, networking, or computing services over the internet, the cloud, to offer faster innovation, flexible resources, economies of scale. Instead of our company buying hardware or software, we can rent or pay per use. So the benefits of cloud computing are many, such as cost. Migration to the cloud helps companies to reduce their IT costs. This is due to the fact that there is no need to invest in capital expenses such as buying hardware and software and maintenance of on-site data centers, as well as personnel required for managing infrastructure. Speed. With just a few mouse clicks, vast amounts of computing resources can be provisioned in minutes due to on-demand and self-service tools available. This gives enterprises flexibility and takes off the pressure of capacity planning. Productivity. Cloud computing eliminates the need for time-consuming IT management chores such as hardware setup, software patching, etc., required for running on-site data centers. This means that IT teams can focus more on achieving more important business objectives. Global scale. Cloud computing services can scale elastically. This means delivering the right amount of IT resources, such as more or less computing power, storage, bandwidth, where they are needed and from the right geographic location. Performance. The biggest cloud computing services run on a worldwide network of secure data centers, which are regularly updated to the latest generation of fast and efficient computing hardware. It is a distinct advantage over a single corporate data center, which includes reduced network latency for applications and greater economies of scale. Reliability. Since data can be mirrored at multiple redundant sites on the cloud provider's network, cloud computing makes data backup, disaster recovery, and business continuity cost-effective and simpler. Security. The customer's data, apps, and infrastructure are protected from potential threats since cloud providers offer a set of policies, technologies, and controls that strengthen the security position of the users. There are three different ways to deploy cloud services. The public cloud. Public clouds are the most common way of deploying cloud services. Services are offered over the public internet and available to anyone who wants to purchase them. The cloud resources, such as servers and storage, are owned and operated by a third-party cloud service provider and delivered over the internet. Services may be free or sold on demand, allowing customers to pay only per usage for the CPU cycles, storage, or bandwidth they consume. Microsoft Azure is an example of a public cloud. With a public cloud, all hardware, software, and other supporting infrastructure is owned and managed by the cloud provider. You access these services and manage your account using a web browser. Examples of why you'd use a public cloud. Service consumption through on-demand or subscription model. The on-demand or subscription model allows you to pay for the portion of CPU storage and other resources that you use or reserve. No upfront investment in hardware. No requirement to purchase, manage, and maintain on-premises hardware and application infrastructure. The cloud service provider is held responsible for all management and maintenance of the system. Automation. Quickly provision infrastructure resources using a web portal, scripts, or automation. Geographic dispersion. Store data centers. Store data near your users or in desired locations without having to maintain your own data centers. Reduced hardware maintenance. The service provider is responsible for hardware maintenance. Now we move on to the private cloud. The private cloud is defined as computing services offered either over the internet or a private internal network and only to select users instead of the general public. Also called an internal or corporate cloud, private cloud computing gives businesses many of the benefits of a public cloud, including self-service, scalability, and elasticity. With the additional control and customization available from dedicated resources over a computing infrastructure hosted on-premises. In addition, private clouds deliver a high level of security and privacy through both company firewalls and internal hosting to ensure operations and sensitive data are not accessible to third-party providers. One drawback is that the company's IT department is held responsible for the costs and accountability of managing the private cloud. So private clouds require the same staffing, management, and maintenance expenses as traditional data center ownership. Examples of why you'd use a private cloud. Pre-existing environment. An existing operating environment that can't be replicated in the public cloud. Legacy applications. Business-critical legacy applications that can't easily be physically relocated. Data sovereignty and security. Political borders and legal requirements may dictate where data can physically exist. Moving on to the hybrid cloud. A hybrid cloud is a computing environment that combines a public cloud and a private cloud by allowing data and applications to be shared between them. When computing and processing demand fluctuates, hybrid cloud computing gives businesses the ability to seamlessly scale their on-premises infrastructure up to the public cloud to handle any overflow without giving third-party data centers access to the entirety of their data. Organizations gain flexibility and computing power of the public cloud for basic and non-sensitive computing tasks while keeping business-critical applications and data on-premises safely behind a company firewall. Examples of why you'd use a hybrid cloud. Existing hardware investment. Business reasons require that you use an existing operating environment and hardware. Regulatory requirements. Regulation requires that data needs to remain at a physical location. Unique operating environment. When a public cloud can't replicate a legacy operating environment. Migration. Move workloads to the cloud over time. Now we come to what is IaaS, PaaS, and SaaS. IaaS, the most basic category of computing services with infrastructure as a service, you rent IT infrastructure, such as servers and virtual machines, storage, networks, operating systems from a cloud provider on a pay-as-you-go basis. PaaS. PaaS, platform as a service, refers to cloud computing services that supply an on-demand environment for developing, testing, delivering, and managing software applications. PaaS is designed to make it easier for developers to quickly create web or mobile apps without worrying about setting up or managing the underlying infrastructure of server, storage, network, and databases needed for development. SaaS, software as a service, is a method for delivering software applications over the internet on demand and typically on a subscription basis. With SaaS, cloud providers host and manage the software application and underlying infrastructure and handle any maintenance like databases and business intelligence tools. Users connect to the application over the internet, usually with a web browser on their phone, tablet, or PC. So now we come to the uses of cloud computing. Here are a few examples of what's possible with cloud services from a cloud provider. Store, backup, and recover data. Protect your data most cost efficiently. and at massive scale by transferring your data over the internet to an offsite cloud storage system that's accessible from any location and any device. Stream audio and video. Connect with your audience anywhere, anytime, on any device with high definition video and audio with global distribution. Deliver software on demand. Also known as software as a service, on-demand software lets you offer the latest software versions and updates to customers anytime they need, anywhere they are. Test and build applications. Reduce application development, cost, and time by using cloud infrastructures that can easily be scaled up or down. Analyze data. Unify your data across teams, divisions, and locations in the cloud. Then use cloud services such as machine learning and artificial intelligence to uncover insights for more informed decisions. Embed intelligence. Use intelligent models to help engage customers and provide valuable insights from the data captured. So, who needs cloud computing? If an organization experiences any of the following, they are probably a good candidate for cloud computing. High business growth that outpaces infrastructure capabilities. Low utilization of existing infrastructure resources. Large volumes of data that are overwhelming your on-premises data storage resources. Slow response times with on-premises infrastructure. Delayed product development cycles due to infrastructure constraints. Cash flow challenges due to high computing infrastructure expenses. Highly mobile or distributed user population. That is from me. These are my references. Thank you for your time. Any questions, please?
Excellent. That's a good way to explain everything when it comes down to, you know, cloud computing, because a lot of people don't realize. Even when they're coming into the internship, they want to go cloud computing. It's like, well, we're all cloud. I don't know what to give you. But that makes it a little bit more, significant to what that might be. Great job. Absolutely great job.
Thank you. I'll stop sharing my screen now.
Okay. All right. So let's see. Mary, are you ready?
I am. Let's see if I can get the share to work for me tonight.
All right.
Are you seeing anything on the screen? Because I don't have a little.
I do. I see your PowerPoint, but it's like partial page and
Let me
the slides. That. Yeah, to scroll down.
There we go. How's that?
There we go. Yes. Full page.
All right. Well, hello, everyone. I'm Mary Bogue, and tonight I thought we might take a fun journey back through time as it relates to data storage. You might ask me, why is this topic? Well, as IT professionals, we will interact with colleagues, clients, and users with a variety of backgrounds, as well as age groups. It is important to recognize that everyone has their own history and experiences in their IT journeys, whether they are working in an IT position or their own experiences in business or personal use with technology, everyone has their story. In pursuing my degree and doing a wide variety of research and training while pursuing this degree, I have realized not only how much has changed over my career, but how much of that experience has shaped me into who I am today and why I have always loved the challenges of being an IT professional. Things never stop changing, and for the most part, they keep improving. This slide represents a lot of history regarding the storage and management of data. Some of these mediums are actually still serving as significant and valuable storage options. Although I may be dating myself, as you will see, it also represents part of my own journey working in various IT positions. Punch cards, paper tape, magnetic tape, removable hard drives, floppy disk, and cloud storage have all had their day of glory, so to speak, and a few of them, of course, are still in use today. Data processing and disaster recovery storage sites have grown in popularity as businesses strive to protect one of their biggest assets, their company data, as well as their customer data. You'll notice a couple of pictures here of storage sites. The one in the middle is what most of you are probably familiar with, walls of servers and mag tape drives. The picture to the left of the cloud storage is actually a data storage disaster recovery site in an old gypsum mine in Grand Rapids, Michigan. I actually had the opportunity to visit this site after a very long elevator ride deep underground. I found a very impressive site with areas secured for data storage and walls of servers leased by companies that back up their entire organization in case of a natural disaster. I'm sure we could find more of these unique sites across the country. Have any of you ever visited a unique disaster recovery or data storage site that you'd like to share with us? Don't be shy if you have one.
I don't know if it would be unique, but I used to work for the airline. And they had an entire separate disaster recovery site in Cincinnati from their main one in Columbus. And so, and it has happened. This was after they had a complete virtual computer failure. They built a whole site for it. So wow. If anything goes down, they would drive the hour to Cincinnati and just everything there is being constantly backed up. So it was a physical backup storage on top of their cloud backup.
Well, then that's good practice to have a plan for the disaster in case the disaster hits the other one.
Well,
thanks for sharing that, Bradley.
It's unfortunate that they only did that after the disaster hit the first one. So.
Of course.
Right. Hindsight, how it always right? goes. Yep. 2020.
Exactly. Anybody else? Okay. So moving on, let's talk about some history. I have picked a few mediums to talk about this evening. It would take a lot more than 15 minutes to discuss all the storage technologies that have been created, and there are sure to be many new ones in the future. Punch cards originated in the 1800s and were originally used to control machine weaving on textile looms. Herman Hollerith, in late 1890, began using punch card technology to tabulate U.S. census data. He founded a new company and began using the punch cards in tabulating machines. By the way, his company grew to become IBM. In the 1950s, IBM began building general-purpose computers that utilized punch cards for input and data storage. IBM, in late 2002, was still exploring punch card technology for a system with the ability of storing 25 million pages of information on the surface the size of a postage stamp, which is amazing to me. My introduction to punch cards was working as a programmer analyst in a refrigerator manufacturing plant. One of the departments I supported was shipping, and one task they were responsible for was applying the appropriate barcode label used for inventory scanning to every refrigerator that left the plant. These barcode labels were generated in the IT data center. The system used to print the labels was driven by punch card technology. There was literally a card catalog of punch cards where a group of cards would be pulled depending on the model of refrigerator being shipped, the quantity ordered, and shipping location. Programs were not stored in the computer. They were stored on the punch card, loaded into the processor, and screen prompts would pop up for the specific information needed for the order. Now, if that doesn't date me, nothing else does. But it was fascinating to watch. That's right. The computer program was actually on the punch card.
Oh, yeah.
Now you're going to date yourself, Landon. Be careful. So most of the earliest computers used spools of paper tape. These spools stored information via punch holes. Like punch cards, programs were read from the punched paper tape and stored in electronic memory for later execution. This technology was used for three decades for both input and output. The first IT-related position I held, I described to people as spending all day typing on a hybrid typewriter. I used to tell everyone it was just a glorified typewriter. You've all probably seen game shows on TV like Let's Make a Deal, where contestants can win prize packages. The company I worked for sold appliances, refrigerators, air conditioners, washers, dryers, and stoves that were purchased for these types of prizes. The job I had was to type the invoice to the purchaser. The typing produced a punched paper tape that captured all the invoice data and was then sent to the billing machine operators, who loaded the base information, and as prompts popped up, they input the specific details of pricing and discounts into their machines, which then also generated a paper tape. The billing machines produced the paper tape that was then sent to our data support center for additional processing and generation of the invoices and capturing sales-related details for decision-making purposes. Early analytics at its best. The 1950s brought a new trend in data storage: magnetic tape. IBM began using magnetic tape, similar to audio tape, for data storage. stored in open rails. They consisted of thin plastic strips coated with a magnetic substance that computers could read from and write to by electronic heads in a special tape drive. Considered to be the primary storage medium since the 1960s, tape drives are being overshadowed by disk and cloud storage due to growing demands and new technology. Hard drives offer higher capacity, lower price, and better usability. Tape drives, including tape cartridges and cassettes, can deteriorate over time, which can result in unwanted loss. Although there are some disadvantages to tape backup, such as higher costs for tape drives and libraries, sensitivity to magnetic fields, and low data copying speed, tape backup still remains relevant in today's data centers. Tape devices provide large storage capacity and can be easily expanded as data storage needs increase. If properly maintained, they can store data for 30 years or more, which makes them popular for long-term retention of critical data. They are also favored by many organizations as data can be protected from ransomware or cloud or malware as backups are stored offline as the tape device is disconnected from the system once the backup is complete. Cloud storage, as we heard of earlier, provides data security online that is accessible anytime from anywhere. It can also provide data backup offsite that supports disaster recovery plans. Cloud systems can specialize in storage of a particular data type, such as digital photos or music, and can also provide general storage of multiple types of data, such as spreadsheets, presentations, documents, and audio files. Apple's iCloud, Amazon Web Services, Dropbox, and Google are very popular cloud storage providers. Data is everywhere. In the security industry alone, close to 300 million surveillance cameras churn out billions of hours worth of video that must be stored. Experts predict storage needs increasing 25 to 30% each year. As this graph shows, in 2010, data created and stored was 2 zettabytes, with 181 zettabytes predicted by 2025. That is a lot of data. Keep in mind, each zettabyte is a trillion gigabytes. It's really hard to wrap your head around that much data. As Internet of Things data volume increases, storage capabilities will need to grow as well. Projections show there will be almost 42 billion connected devices by 2025, and they will generate 79.4 zettabytes of data just from IoT. The Internet of Things is not the only contributor to data storage needs. IoT, mobiles, laptops, and vehicles, for example, are endpoints. Branch offices, cell towers, gateways are on the edge, with the core being large data centers, including public and private clouds. Storage must be able to work on premises data as well as multiple cloud services. Businesses must find solutions with extra capacity and better reliability to manage all of the data that will be generated. It is imperative to find better means of storing data, ways that are energy efficient and don't take up large amounts of space. Researchers are working on options, but none are quite ready for implementation. For example, 5D optical storage is being studied that involves lasers etching information into cubes of silicon glass, which would be used for long-term storage as the method is permanent and requires no power. A cube could store hundreds of terabytes. Another area of current research is storing data at super cold temperatures. These researchers have already developed man-made molecules with the ability to store several hundred times more data than current hard drives. The key storing molecules at low temperatures. Maybe that gypsum mine was ahead of its time. Looking forward, rest assured there are things being researched and tested that most of us have not even considered. This is simply my thoughts. As I stated in the beginning, everyone has their story. I try to remind myself of when working with colleagues and users, having an understanding of their journey or experiences with technology may make it easier for you to determine their needs for the current project or give you the ability to bridge the gap between where they have been and where they need to be with the technology change you are implementing. Thank you for your attention this evening, and I am happy to take questions or comments. Tell me your experiences.
Well, for my masterclass meeting, I was planning on making this exact presentation. So,
well, I'm glad I got ahead of you.
Yep, just ahead. I'll have to come up with something else.
You'll be fine. Or just take it and enhance it from your perspective on how it was used. I will stop sharing my screen. Whoops.
Excellent, Mary. That was so cool. It really was. I mean, I don't go as far back as punch cards, not making anybody feel bad. I do remember the cassettes that my uncle was using on the Commodore 64.
Yes,
when he was
yes.
backing stuff up. Yeah, that's funny. That really brings me back, that's for sure.
Commodore 64, that was so advanced.
I know it was. Seriously, right. Compared to all this other stuff you see, I mean,
I had crazy. A VIC 20.
I remember doing the first time the big round portable drives came out, and we would put that in on a Monday morning, and we'd process all our work for the week, and then on Fridays they would pull it out of there with its handle and run it to the downtown data center every Friday afternoon. The greatest part about that was I got to leave work 2 hours early.
That's cool. I still don't understand the punch cards and how that works. It's like you got to type it all in and it would punch out, like, I don't know, like full sentences or something.
It was all coded. I mean, it was fascinating to me. The first time I saw it, I was shocked. At that point in my career, this was old technology that they just had not eliminated. In fact, as I came in as a program analyst, we were converting a lot of the systems over from the old punch card stuff and paper tape stuff to, they were running, converting to AS400s, IBM AS400 machines. So a lot of that stuff was being rewritten. And so we had to figure out how to read some of the programs that were on the punch cards and coded. Cryptic coding and write programs that would make them work now on the AS400. It was quite an interesting project. I'd never seen any of that stuff before.
It was assembly.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what it is. Exactly.
It is assembly language. That's correct. You.
Well, that is something to learn. Thank you, Mary. That was great.
You're welcome. Thanks.
Very cool. All right. So next, Pamela, are you ready? I don't see Pamela. I wonder if she sent me one that needs to be with the annotation on it. So let's go ahead to Bradley, and I'll see if I've got something from Pamela.
All right. Sounds good.
All righty.
Okay. Can everyone see my screen?
Yes.
Awesome. Yes. All right. So my name's Brad Marker. I am a data analyst student getting my master's here at Purdue Global. My topic is technology and AI evolution in sports. So technology, as we've talked about before and again, is rapidly changing. From when I started school, I remember saving reports on a floppy disk to bring to the library to print out to turn in. So technology is ever changing. With the addition of AI and algorithms, they're becoming more and more complex. Their uses are becoming more diverse and more renowned, and everyone's using them. It's revolutionizing all aspects of sports. From training to injury prevention and recovery, even fan involvement is being affected by these changes in technology. So AI use in sports. Data-driven approach has really changed the game. If you look at sports like baseball, have always used stats very highly. But the way data is collected now is vastly different and more complex. With all the data that is collected, they can make training optimization for individual players, where they can say, is like, we can tell that you are deficient in this spot, or we see that you're having problems shooting the basket like this, or hitting golfing on a fairway with this kind of level. And so they can make a specific training regimen to improve on those skills. Algorithm-based decisions are also becoming more and more popular, where the AI with a good algorithm can tell you, is like, hey, you should run this play, or If the course is programmed in for like golf, it could be like, oh, on this freeway, let's throw out the 9 wood, or because the wind's like this, aim that way. It even can track your performance with performance analysis and let people know how much they're improving if they've reached a peak or a valley. AI assistants are also becoming popular with just preemptively giving coaches and players what they should do, and be, especially if it's live recording data that is happening during a game or event. But as always, more data is not always better. The old saying, garbage in, garbage out. But if you can get good data and have someone to properly filter out, it is vastly helpful. Technology innovation in sports training. Because of all the changes in technology, athletes are able to push their limits further and further than they ever had before. From wearable devices, sensor technology, analytics, even just cameras that can track a person's movement to help them improve. I have a short little clip of what won gold in the Olympics for vault in 1932 and in 2012, which I think shows vastly how different sports has changed. As you can see, in 1932, the man barely made a vault over, where in 2012, he had to do a series of flips and turns. Data analytics and sports performance. Data is crucial to optimizing any program. You need to get a large amount of data and smartly separate it into what you need and what is not needed. Algorithms can uncover hidden patterns about players and opponents, where you can, another football reference is like, an algorithm can tell you is like, oh, this team is more likely to throw it in this position or make a run or punt. And that can help make your own decisions. Back to AI assistance that I talked about earlier. If you can make a program sophisticated enough, it can actually preemptively tell you is like, hey, if this happens, you should run this play. It also allows for trackable progress and how the team's doing, how individual players are doing, and you can see, like, it can tell you if your team is always leaves their left side open, or if, like, you're playing tennis and you always serve a certain way and you're becoming too predictable. Like I said, as if you can get good data, the analytics can truly change the game. AI and biomechanics analyze. So this picture is a guy wearing a wearable technology brace that will test his range of movement. It helps to optimize a player's movement. This one is particularly for rehabilitation. So after an injury, they can see is like, all right, you're throwing at like 70% of what you were before, or your range of movement's improved 50%. And especially if there's a good baseline that they have before injuries, it can help show where improvement is needed and what needs to be specialized worked on. And let's not forget about the fans of the game. The AI greatly helps with fan engagement. We've all been targeted by ads. From doing this research, I am constantly getting technology sports ads. I just got one before this class for a sensor that you put on your golf club, and it will tell you how straight your swing is or how hard you're swinging it, and to help improve it. So because of cookies and everything else that tracks us, it can give you a more engaged event at a stadium. It even can improve it for people who are watching at home. The AI can help make better calls. It can help drive cameras and be like, oh, auto switch to camera 2, which will have a better angle for how the players are moving and everything. Overall, enhancing the entire experience for viewers. And as everyone talks about with AI, There's the ethical consideration of sports. All changes of technology always need to consider ethical and the impact it will have on sport, on the topic it's talking about. Transparency is needed. There's lots of I'm trying to remember what teams there were, but like stolen playbooks and stuff like that. This using like AI and being able to record stuff, even like seeing pictures or videotapes of coaches saying stuff into their mic, AI usually can translate it and be like, oh, if he does this, that means they're going to run this play. Or as baseball, if you've ever seen the catchers hit, throw out signs and all that, if cameras are recording that, then they can give it to their batter and let them know what's happening. Technology always also has a huge bias in itself, which I'll talk about more on the next slide. For the global impact of AI in sports, global impact has changed scouting. It has significantly made the world significantly smaller, as technology does. Because of this, kids uploading videos or other or entire sports games, scouters can easily find talented players, and talented players are easier to promote themselves. But technology, especially new and emerging technology, comes to a class issue of rich versus poor. It's technology is expensive. It's expensive to develop and start up. And so with whoever has the more capital will have the edge in this. It's always a joke in baseball that the Yankees, being one of the richest teams, always buys their talent. Because there's not a pay cap. And this could become an issue with the more technologies used in sports. And so, overall, AI will be changing the games completely and will continue to do so. And it needs to be watched, but it really is going to benefit everyday players such as myself in golf, where I recently took a lesson, which is why I wanted to do this topic, where they had a camera where it did anchor points, and it was able to tell where I was bending too much or was choked up too much. And honestly, that is just available technology to everyday people now, where it used to be this expensive for professionals only. And so that is my presentation. Does anyone have any questions?
Great job, Brad.
Thank you. I will stop sharing my screen now.
That was great. Oh,
did it already Absolutely. Stop? Cool. Thank you.
Yeah, excellent job. I'm just learning so much today.
Honestly, the master classes are all very good. I've scrolled through some of the past ones just to see what interesting topics have been done. Everyone always has an interesting take and a different reason why they want to do it.
Absolutely. There's some great ones. So I don't have one for Pamela. She was supposed to send it to me, but she didn't. And now she's been decommissioned from the system. So maybe I can get it from her and I will show it in another masterclass. But that means that we are done for tonight. Unless anybody has any questions for any of our presenters this evening. A round of applause to everybody that did present and did such a great job. Absolutely. Thank you so much for taking the time to coming and join us this evening. Loved it.
Yeah, thanks Loved everyone for being here. Had.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, they're all great. Thanks, everyone.
Yep, thank you so much. So everybody have a great rest of the evening and have a safe weekend. Thank you.
Thank you.
I guess I missed it all.
Yeah, we ran a little late at orientation too.
Yeah.